something for the weekend. On Saturday, I am delighted to have Fiona O'Carroll on the phone today. And Fiona, I think you're probably the only member of the O'Carroll family who I haven't had on the show. Your Auntie Eilish was on there about 2 weeks ago. And you're... Jesus, she can talk, can't she?
I get on great with Eilish, I have to say. I'm very, very... We're very close. She is my favourite aunt.
Oh, she's your favourite. Oh, you're going to be in trouble now? Because you've got a million aunties, don't you?
I actually do. But in fairness, I think they'd all agree with me. I think she's everyone's favourite aunt.
Yeah, oh, she's great. You always say to her, Eilish, have you got 5 minutes? Ah, yeah, no bother at all. And she'll be on the phone an hour later.
I was going to say, I think that's an O'Carroll thing. So you might have to be tuned off of everything after my day.
So we should dedicate the whole show to you today, should we? Okay. Cancel all the other interviews. We've no time. Yeah, definitely in the blood. Fiona, not only are you Maria Brown in Mrs. Brown's Boys and the daughter of Brendan O'Carroll, you're also in Coppers, the musical. It's back and it's such a brilliant one because it is written, of course, by Paul Howard, who does all the Ross O'Carroll Kellys, and he's just such a funny writer. How did you come to be part of the cast?
Well, as you know, with the whole COVID thing and everything else, you know, everyone was kind of, you know, I think a lot of things have changed for ourselves in the industry, and a lot of people have moved on from one show to the next, and people's dates changed and stuff. And a part became available in Coppers, and I got wind of it. I put my name forward, and I sent off some self-tapes, and I got word back that I got the part. So I was over the moon, because I've never actually gotten to see Coppers myself live, but all of my friends have. Very often when you're working yourself, you don't really get to see that many shows as well. So, but my friends were always raving about it, and they told me how funny it was. And of course, written by Paul Howard, so naturally it's going to be hilarious. So then I got the script, and it actually, oh my God. And I got sent a Vimeo, and it is absolutely hilarious. And it's so fun, high energy, so witty. The one-liners are coming at you hot and heavy. And it's just like... it's incredible. I would imagine being an audience member, you just come away buzzing after being at the show.
Yeah.
Because it's based in Copperface Jacks, you know, I'm sure there's loads of people my age anyway would remember going to Copperface Jacks and all that music and those nights out and stuff like that, you know. So
yeah,
it brings back great memories as well.
You're the exact same age as me, Fiona. I do know a couple who did meet in Coppers, and they're married about 20 years now. So yeah, it happens.
Do you know, there's a few of them around. There is a few. But you know where it was where everyone went though, in fairness. Yeah, it was where it was like the hub.
How did you get out though, Fiona? Because you've got four children. When was the last big night out?
Oh, well, that's what I was just saying. I actually was trying to remember. God, well, I mean, I got married. I had my first baby when I was 26. So my nights in Coppers didn't last very long.
No.
It was like early 20s. But I do remember, I think my last night out in Coppers, I did have children. And I think it was one of those, I was out with Bernard Dunn, actually. And there was a few of us out. And he hadn't finished a fight. And I think he just retired or something. And there was a bit of a celebration in town. And then there was that kind of, Stephanie, will we go to Coppers? And I was like, oh my God, I haven't been there in years.
Yeah, yeah. Oh God. And do you feel like the L one then when you go there? Because I did the last time I was there.
I felt completely out of place.
I felt like I was someone's mum collecting them.
Yeah. I didn't stay long now, I'll be honest. I think I had one drink and I left.
Because you're just not able. I'm just not able for the tiredness anymore.
I know. It's mad, isn't it? I mean, I've got four boys and it's just nonstop. It's nonstop.
Are you like the taxi always having to ferry them around?
Yeah. Well, before I was living out a little bit, so I literally was in the car all the time. But we recently moved there just before lockdown after myself and Martin had separated back in 2018. And then about a year later, I was like, I can't keep doing all this myself. Mm. So we moved back out closer to my mom and stuff. And I'm, you know, in Ashburn town now, which is great. And the boys then have the freedom now to kind of go and wander. And also with three of them being on the spectrum, sometimes when you're living out, it's great, but they don't get those life skills that they need.
Yeah.
You know, so little things like being able to get the bus and go into the shop and buy something and get change and all those normal kind of everyday life skills that you could take for granted, they're now getting to experience, which is amazing.
I didn't realise that. So three of them are on the spectrum. Is that difficult to manage for you?
Not so much anymore at the moment. To be honest, it goes in phases, and you touch wood and thank yourself when things are going great. But it's one of those things where it'll always manifest itself in something at some point along the line, and they're all so different. So when they were younger, it was very difficult because you had that, the communication wasn't great. They weren't able to articulate what was wrong. Mm. Two of my boys didn't speak until they were about four and a half. And so that was very frustrating for them. So you'd have a lot of outbursts and stuff like that. And very often it was just because of pure frustration, because they weren't able to actually tell you what the problem was or what was wrong. And then they have like sensory issues. Like you're walking into a place and there's a noise that's bothering them, but they can't tell you that that's bothering them and you don't notice it. So you're just thinking that your child is going off on one for another second. Yeah. And you go, what's going on here? So it's about getting to know each of them individually and kind of knowing what those triggers are and then making sure that you kind of tackle them before they happen.
Yeah,
and
then you know them inside out, don't you? When you're their mom, you know everything. Yeah.
Well, my oldest didn't get diagnosed till he was eight, which is quite late. But my youngest was diagnosed at three. So if you met my youngest now, you wouldn't even know because he has so much early intervention, which cost a second arm and a leg, to be honest. But thankfully enough, I was in a position to do it for him. Mm. And he has come on leaps and bounds. And actually, COVID was great for him because I was able to spend a lot of time with him one-on-one. Like he wasn't stringing sentences together or anything like that when COVID hit. He was still having toileting issues. And in those three lockdowns that we had, his speech came on great because I was able to work with him and was able to give him that full attention, undivided attention. And with not being working, I was able to be here all the time. Yes. We got over the toileting issues, which was amazing. And he also learned to ride a bike. So it's amazing. Like, you know, in one sense, COVID was terrible for me work-wise. And caused me a huge amount of anxiety and stress because I'm there going, how the hell am I going to provide for four children and I've no work? Mm. And I don't even know if the work is ever going to come back. And what am I going to do now? Because I'm not qualified to do anything else. And I've been self-employed all my life. I'm not entitled to anything. What am I going to do? You know, so that was highly stressful. But at the same time, I think I'm very grateful for that time that I was able to spend with my kids. Because if I hadn't been working, I probably wouldn't have been there for him to ride his first bike. Yeah,
I totally get what you mean. It's a blessing as well. It was, I think, as well. I really get what you mean. But I'm noticing as well around the place, even at the weekend there at the local shopping centre, there's so much more for kids who have autism now. There was like parking spots close to the door, and it had a marked out saying autism awareness. And there's different shopping times, and there seems to be just more happening now, more help for people now.
Yeah, there is. I think there is a greater awareness, but I think there needs to be more. I mean, I think people view autism as, and there's all different levels and variations and types of autism. You know, the spectrum is so wide, you know, and not every child is the same, and not every, you know, symptom or red flag or whatever you want to call it is the same. They're all so individual, you know, and it's having the awareness to know that it's not, you know, not everyone's the same, you know, and we all have our own little difficulties, you know, and some are more than others. Like my eldest son has severe dyslexia and, you know, and would struggle with, you know, English and writing and spelling. And, you know, he struggles with people's names. His short-term memory is not great. And it would take him a long time for his brain goes so fast, but then to try and compute what's going on in his brain out of his mouth, sometimes you have to be patient with him to allow him to actually express what it is what he's trying to say. Yeah. But highly intelligent, you know, like his IQ is quite high, but he's highly intelligent. And he finds that extremely frustrating, you know, and then, you know, my other child would have sensory issues, you know, certain lights, certain sounds, food is a big thing. It's like food is a massive thing in my house. I have to make about three or four dinners every day because none of them eat the same thing. You know, and you're just constantly worrying, I suppose, as a parent. And like I have friends of mine who have children with autism, and like that, you know, the prep that goes into any kind of family events or family outings, and there's always a plan B or a plan C, or in case this happens, we have this. In case that happens, we have that. Like the amount of mental prep that you have to do. And you also have to be ready to leave at any second. And that was the big thing that I used to, you know, we couldn't really go to restaurants when my kids were younger because, you know, if one of them had a meltdown, you'd be mortified. Or birthday parties, you know, two of my children might be having a great time and the other one might be having a meltdown. It'd be like, I'm sorry, lads, but we have to go. You know, and you have to just scoop them all up and just leave. You know, so it is difficult. It is hard. And I think, you know, sometimes when people hear the word autism, they just automatically think, you know, I don't know, that there's something wrong with them. Do you know what I mean? That they're not, that there's mentally wrong with them or something. I don't know. It's just, there's this big stigma that goes with it.
Yeah.
But really, they're all just individuals and they just have certain needs that need to be catered for. And once those needs are catered for, they're just normal kids. They're normal, you know. They might just think a bit differently or do things a bit differently, but sure, don't we all?
Yeah. I'm sure, you know, when you were filming in the UK, it must have been difficult. So trying to manage everything. You're trying to, you know, focus on your career and you're also trying to be a good mom. And you're trying.
Yeah.
And people might say, oh, you wouldn't ask a man that question. But look, it's a valid question, I think.
I know, it is true. And I have to say, my ex-husband is amazing. He's absolutely fantastic and he's very hands-on. We took a long time to kind of come to terms with what was going on. I always knew there was something not right, particularly when Eli came along, because he was just so difficult as a child. He was very attached to me. And I knew, you know, you just know as a mother, like, there's something not right. And he was like born angry. You know, he was like one of these kids who was just always angry. And it was one of those ones where you're kind of thinking, God, he's going to be known as the bold child because he was always, but he wasn't a bold child. He's a fabulous, beautiful, most loving child you'd ever meet. But he was just extremely frustrated because he needed grammar, which I didn't know. And he had delayed speech and he had a lot of sensory issues. And when we were touring, we used to find that quite difficult because he wouldn't go asleep unless he was being moved. So in a pram, rocked. So I'd be walking the streets, you know, of Glasgow, 2 o'clock in the morning with a screaming baby in the piss and the rain, trying to get him to go asleep, you know, after doing the show. And then I'm back up at 5 in the morning with my other child who gets up at 5 because he's an early bird, you know. So, and you'd be literally just tagging each other. And every apartment and every hotel that I went into, I had to bring a roll of black bags with me. And I would have to tape all of the windows and black them all out because the light would bother him. And I had to rearrange the room so that it looked a bit like his room at home. And I'd have to bring his duvet and his pillow and his teddies and all of the things that were familiar to him and then recreate his bedroom in every hotel room or every apartment that we went to.
My God.
And that was, you know, I'd arrive and I'd have to spend a few hours prepping and then, you know, go to work. That was hard.
Wow.
Moving around from
and you would have spent a lot of time on the road touring. I mean, you know, Mrs. Brown's Boys, such a big show worldwide. I'm sure you were always travelling, were you?
Yeah, no, I always was. And my brother, you know, he used to always slag me off and stuff because I was so, my children dictated my routine. They dictated everything. I had to stick to their routine because if I didn't stick to their routine, everything just fell apart. And my brother was like, you're so strict, for God's sake, you know, relax, relax. And I'm like, you've no idea. I can't relax. I need to keep this for them because
keep the plates spinning.
The aftermath.
Yeah.
Of not sticking to a routine. Like if they don't get to sleep at a certain time or if they don't get the adequate amount of sleep. Or with Eli, it was so funny because he didn't actually like food, but then would be extremely hangry because he was starving.
Yeah.
So I, as a mother, I was going, what am I going to do here? All he wanted to do was feed off of me. And after a year of feeding him and me trying to work as well, like I was literally going on stage doing my part and then he's screaming in the wings and I'd run off and I'd be literally latching him onto me to keep him quiet for the next scene until I had to run back out again. And I'd have a girl there, my au pair, with me, you know, holding him, waiting for me to run back out just to kind of, because it became a soothing thing as well. So then trying to knock that on the head and then also with, you know, trying to get solids into him. And I know this sounds terrible, but I had to force feed him. I used to have to force feed him food because it was the only way I'd be able to get food into him. I used to have to hold him quite tight and, you know, literally put the food in his mouth and make him swallow it. And he hated it. And it's only then till afterwards that I realized that he didn't like wet food. But, you know, when they're a baby, you're trying to go, you can't give them, you know, dry food. I didn't know that. The whole baby, the baby-led feeding thing didn't exist back then for me. Mm. Yeah, the baby-led weaning or whatever it is where you give them like actual...
They let them pick,
that didn't
kind
exist
of...
for me. I didn't know about that back then. You know, I just went with what I knew and it was like, you know, mashed up baby food. And he hated wet food and I didn't know that. Of course, he couldn't tell me. And it wasn't until he got older that I realised, A, all of his food had to be dry and B, it all had to be brown. He wouldn't eat anything that wasn't brown or dark in colour.
Oh my God.
Everything,
This is hard to believe. Nobody, none of your audience would have had any clue this was going on. Have you spoken about this before, or are you just? I had no idea about all this.
Oh, it's just what you do. I'm no different to all of the other mothers out there who are all.
Oh, I know. But did you ever have times, Fiona, where you thought to yourself, right, I just need to get an easier life than doing this and trying to do it all? Maybe if I stayed at home with them or got something that was kind of easier, that you didn't have to be changing a hotel room to make it look like their bedroom at home, or did you ever feel like walking away?
No, to be honest, my dad was great. I have to say that was, you know, one of the beauties and benefits of working with my dad and working with family, that, you know, if any of my kids were sick or if I ever needed to have a night off, and I'm sure there's fans out there and, you know, who've actually still complained to me in the past, I went to see you in Manchester and you weren't performing. And it's like, I'm really sorry, but actually I had to be with one of my children, you know, and we did have, once we became successful enough, we were able to afford the luxury of having stand-ins, you know, and to have somebody to be able to take over at the drop of a hat if one of us got sick or if one of our children needed us. But because I was able to take my kids to work, I was surrounded by family, that was a huge support network that I had. But what I realised then after a time was that, particularly Eli, Felix was fine. And unfortunately, Felix had to not suffer, but Felix had, I couldn't separate them. Do you know what I mean? But Eli didn't do well with touring. The touring life just didn't suit him. So it got to a stage then where I would have to go on tour and leave them at home. And that was heartbreaking for me, I think, more so than for them, because they were happy. And I knew that they were happy. I just thought that's what made me okay with it, is that they were at home in their rooms with all their stuff, all their toys. They had their routine. And once they had their routine and they had their little thing going, they were happy out, you know. And God bless FaceTime and being able to do video calls and that kind of thing. Well, back then, you know, they just look at you because they weren't able to actually talk to me. But I had to do that for them because it was just too stressful for them. And then my dad, being, you know, the wonderful man that he is, would try and dictate the tour based around our needs, myself and Danny and our kids and, you know, our school holidays and that kind of thing. He would have a look at the school calendar and think, right, well, how can we work these dates out that would suit everybody? And he's always done his best to be very accommodating, which I would never have been afforded that luxury in any other production. That just doesn't happen. So yeah. I'm extremely lucky that I have been granted the opportunity to be able to go on stage, do what I do, look after my children, feed my children, and give them the best opportunity, as well as, you know, be able to continue working. Because I think in any other situation, I probably would have had to have taken the time off and been at home.
Yeah, I think it's important for you as well to have your own thing that you do that's for you as well.
Well, look, it's not for everybody being a stay-at-home mum. You know, some people thrive on it and absolutely love it. I quickly realised that being a full-time stay-at-home mum wasn't really for me, and ultimately not for my children, because they weren't getting the best of me. I am a much better mother when I get the opportunity to go even out for a couple of hours and then come back. Yeah. I think everybody needs that bit of a break, especially when they're that young as well. And I suppose particularly with my kids, with them having those extra needs and stuff like that. I mean, God love them. When people used to come in to babysit the kids, like, I would have a rota, a timetable, and it would be exact, and a menu, and everything has it, you know. And maybe I often think maybe I'm on the spectrum myself, but because of the way everything was in my house, like, I have everything labeled, like, everything has its place, you know, because I had other people coming in to help me.
You needed them to know the routine. I know, I get you.
I needed them to know exactly where everything was, what the routine was. This is here, that's there, this is here. And that the kids knew where everything was, you know, because very often, like, my mom would come in, or Martin's mum lived with us for a bit to help us out, and my mom would help me out. And of course, when you come back, you know, typical mammies, they were like, they put things wherever they wanted, and, you know, then you can't find anything. So, no, it's just, it's a matter of being prepared and creating a good system. And
yeah, you don't need chaos on top of it all, not being able to find things.
No.
How is your dad, Fiona?
But now what happens is the boys come on the road with us now, and what they do is they come on for the weekends or when they're off school and stuff, and they absolutely adore it. They love it. Then they love the comfort of their own home as well. So they get the best of both now.
Fiona, tell me, how is your dad, Brendan O'Carroll? I haven't spoken to him in probably 2 years.
He's great. I'm not a bother. I mean, he's over in Florida. You know, yeah. COVID didn't happen for him. He was still out playing golf every day. No, he's grand. I haven't really seen him, you see, because with COVID and that, you know, Dad moved out to Florida, well, that must be like 15 or 20 years ago now. Mm. I think he recently got his citizenship, actually. So that's his home there. And before, when my kids were younger, I used to be able to go out and spend a lot of time out in Florida, which was great. But now with school commitments and stuff like that, you can't just jump on a plane.
I know,
you feel
it's
like
impossible, isn't it? Yeah.
No, and I also having 4 kids, flights are gone up. They're so expensive.
Listen to me, you I've know? Just spent the whole weekend trying to price a holiday, and it's just bonkers. What's happened?
Isn't it?
It's like as if you're flying on a private plane or something.
It's gone ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And it's like trying to justify spending that amount of money for a week or two is just you're like, can't do it.
Everyone assumes because you're a part of the O'Carroll family that you're absolutely loaded and you just don't know what to be spending your money on because there's so much coming in, you see?
Yeah, no, it doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
You wish it did.
It's due to the writer, creator who gets all the royalties, who makes the most money. No, I have to say my dad is very generous. He's extremely generous and is with all of his cast members. He probably pays the best in the business, if I'm honest. So we are very, very lucky. But I'm still a jobbing actress. So no, it doesn't like, you know, but even some of my closest friends are looking at me going, why did you sell your car? And I'm like, what do you mean? If I had to sell my car during lockdown. They're like, but why? And I was like, because I needed the money. I had to pay my bills. What? Like, they look at you baffled, like, but like, and I was like, you don't understand. I'm self-employed. I don't get that PUP benefits that you get. There's nobody there looking after me when the shit hits the fan.
Yeah. And you have 4 children as well, who are costly
children.
Little monsters, aren't they?
They are. And also all of their extra stuff that you need to do. Do you know what I mean? Like, I had to get an AB specialist tutor to work one-on-one with my youngest child, you know, and that costs absolute fortune. You know, I mean, he's been on the waiting list for speech therapy. I think he only got seen there last year. The child is 6. He's been on it since he was 3.
So you have to push and pay for things, and don't you? Because you'd be waiting and waiting, and then the progress and
the
timing.
And I'm very lucky that I was in a position to do that, you know. And I would spend every penny I have to make sure that my kids got the best that whatever they needed, you know, as any parent would. But think of all those families out there who can't afford to do that, who are living in those situations where they know their children need that extra bit of help and they can't get it for them. That's the bit that gets me. It's like, these are needs and these are essential needs for children that they should get. But unfortunately, the resources are just not there.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They are just not there. I mean, my Felix is what? He's 15 now and he still had no psychology. He's had no psychological intervention. He's been on a waiting list now since he was 8 and he's now 16 or 15. My other son, Eli, would suffer with anxiety. And we've had a few bad episodes and stuff like that, particularly with COVID. And at one stage, I got extremely worried about him. And I went to my GP and she referred him to CAMHS. And then CAMHS wouldn't take him and they referred him to the 6 to 18 team. And then the 6 to 18 team got back to me and referred me back to CAMHS. And they just keep sending me from one to the other, from one to the other. And, you know, and like that during lockdown, I was like, I have no income. I can't actually afford any private help here. So I'm just going to have to sit and wait and see and apply for whatever I can. But again, still nothing. You know, it's a struggle. It really is a struggle. I can only imagine other parents out there are struggling too. And you just like that. You can only fight for your own. You really can. I don't know. I just think that they're under-resourced. You can give out as much as you want about the HSC. And I have to say, Enable Ireland were amazing with Dexter. They were so, so good. But they're also in the middle of a transitional period at the moment. They're trying to change the whole system. And that's kind of sent it all up, you know, all over the place. They're completely under-resourced, you know, and that's not their fault. Do you get me? They need more help so they can filter that help back down to the parents who need it and to the children who need it.
Isn't it funny, Fiona, how we said there at the start, you know, I was asking this question about you being a mammy and about working, and most of our chat has been about your children, because at the end of the day, that's what's so important to us, isn't it? You know, we talk about, you know, your career and your, you know, being an actress and that, but that's really what it comes down to, making sure they're okay. Fiona, it's been fabulous having you on, and as you did tell me at the start, you are an O'Carroll, so you would talk, and you've certainly done that. It's been lovely having you on,
sorry.
But I've run out of time. I'm so sorry. you're going to be at Copperface Jacks, the musical. It is on at the Olympia for a limited run again between the 2nd and the 20th of August. Just who are the people who are going to be in the cast with you? There's some well-known faces there too.
Well, you've got Stephen O'Leary there from, he plays Mossy's and he's also in Fair City. And you've got, well, you know Johnny Ward.
Of course.
Johnny Ward. Yeah, the one who kidnapped
Katie in Fair City for a year.
That's right. Oh, you know what? Johnny is basically the driving force behind Coppers. He is, I tell you, he's just a bundle of energy and he has such a presence. And I can't wait to actually work with him. I met Johnny once or twice years ago, I think, at a panto. I think he was doing Peter Pan or something, just very briefly. And then when I actually got the part in Coppers, we touched base. And we've recently been hanging out there a while. And you know what? He's such a hoot. Yeah. He's absolutely brilliant. He's such a lovely guy.
His mum is one of our number one listeners, one of our most loyal listeners.
I love his mum. He invited me around to his house for a cup of tea. And I think me and his mum ended up sitting there chatting for ages. Apparently she's done the show.
Funnily
with my
enough,
dad and
you were
like
chatting
that.
For ages, Fiona. Funnily enough, who'd have thought?
I know, funny enough. I know, I should shut up now, shouldn't I? Sorry.
Not at all.
But yes, Sue, come and see us in Coppers. Olympia for the 3 weeks between the 2nd and the 20th of August. But we're also doing a week in UCH in Limerick. Between the 26th and the 30th of July, and then we're in the Cork Opera House after Dublin from the 23rd to the 27th of August. So if anybody can make any of those dates, we would love to have you along, and I promise you you'll have a great night. It's such a good show.
Brilliant. Fiona, lovely catching up. Hopefully you'll be on again and we'll have more time the next time. I've run out of time, but it's been really great talking to you. Thanks so much for coming on.
No worries at all. Lovely
Cheers.
Chatting to you.
Thanks Fiona. See you.
Bye.
It is something for the weekend on Ireland's Classic Hits.